It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for Feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning. Welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford, and I am your host this morning. And this morning we're going to be talking about diversity in the senior executive service and agency plans and efforts to implement diversity and inclusion plans to the extent that is happening, and just what we're doing to make sure the federal workforce is as diverse as it can be. And to help us with our topic, I'd like to welcome Bill Brown, who's from the he's the president of the African American Federal Executives Association. Bill, welcome to Fed Talk.
Thank you, Bill.
And also Tommy Wang, who is the head of the Asian American Government Executives Network. Tommy, welcome to Fed Talk.
Thanks, Bill. How are you doing?
Yeah, it's good to have you here. I'd like to go back, Bill. You have a very distinguished career in federal service, and you're retired. But even after you're retired, you're still very much a part of the federal community. Tell us a little bit about what you've done.
Well, in terms of my federal career, I'm the former top civilian at the Army Corps of Engineers, retired in 2003, and then went into the private industry. But I think I was quite concerned while a member of the senior executive service at the lack of diversity within the SES. And so back in 2002, four African-American members founded the African-American Federal Executive Association. It was very, very interesting. It was in February of 2002, and we've been pretty active since that time. Our goal is really to promote African Americans within and into the senior executive service.
So you do not have to be a member of the SES to be a member of the African American Federal Executives Association.
You do not have to be a member. In fact, the bulk of our membership is in the GS-14 and GS-15 grades, but we also placed on our board a GS-13 because we received a lot of comments about helping the feeder group, and so that's been a great attribute to our organization.
So, Tommy, tell us a little bit about the Asian American Government Executives Network. I know you just finished a big conference.
Yes, Asian American Government Executive Network, or AGEN, is a nonprofit, nonpartisan. It's 100% volunteer organization, and it was created in 1993 by a handful of Asian American founder senior executive service members at that time who got together over dinner and recognized that there weren't too many AAPIs in the SES, and they formed an organization. And the mission is very simple: to help other AAPIs get into the senior levels of government.
So when you say AAPI, you mean?
The Asian American Pacific Islanders.
Okay, and that I assume is what most of your membership consists of?
Most, yes, but you're not required to be a member of the AAPI community to be part of AGEN. In fact, we do have several members that are not part of the AAPI community.
So, Tommy, I'm interested in your, what do you do in your day job?
I'm the CIO of the Merit Systems Protection Board.
Okay, and when you're working for
myself.
When you're doing your AGEN work, one of the things I know you work on is a big conference you just finished. Tell us a little bit about what happened there.
Well, the conference that we had this year is a one-day conference in Arlington, Virginia, and we were very happy with the turnout. We had over 400 attendees. And the theme was the leadership in an austere environment, which you know, fits the environment that we're in today in the government arena. And we had several speakers, such as John Berry, the director of OPM, John Trezina, the assistant secretary for fair housing at HUD, and assistant secretary of Navy Juan Garcia, as well as DOD CIO Terry Takai. And in addition to that, we had three tracks of workshops plus coaching. We ran over 120 coaching sessions, which was very popular.
So, Tommy, do you feel and do you sense and did your membership sense that there are barriers to for Asian American Pacific Islanders getting into the senior executive service of the federal government?
Yeah, we do, because when you look at the numbers, the Asian American Pacific Islander population represents about 6% of the federal workforce, but only 3% of the senior executive service. Even though the 3% is the highest it's ever been, it's still only about half the population. And when Ogden first started, it was only around 1%. So there has been increase and improvement, but still representation is low compared to the overall population.
And Bill, for African Americans, do you see barriers to coming into the SES?
Absolutely. We see barriers to coming into the SES. We've more or less been holding at about just a little bit over 8% of the senior executive service, with actually a drop of several percentage points drop in African American males. On the other side, there have been increases in the African American females. And one thing I did want to point out here, Bill, is that both Ogden and AAFEA have been working closely together here also, because we have a similar purpose and goal and similar kinds of programs. We also had a national workshop, which we held back in April, and our theme was the call to excellence. And the interesting thing was that this year we had more newcomers than we've had in previous years through programs such as this and so forth, where the message got out about these kinds of activities. Ours is a 2.5-day program, and we hold it at the Marriott Conference Center in Newport News, Virginia. And we had administrative officials there, and we had the Assistant Secretary of the Army also for diversity also there. But we also bring in consultants from the outside to help us. And the goal is to, if you would, to mold that individual and make them what I call SES ready. And to talk with them about the barriers that they will encounter, both the written and the unwritten rules of the road.
There are some unwritten rules, Bill. You know that, having been a senior executive for many years yourself.
Absolutely. And we run one of the high points of our conference is a charm school. This is the most popular event that we have in our conference. And in the charm school, think of it as a finishing school. We're going to talk about your dress. We're going to talk about grooming. We're going to talk about speech. We're going to talk about your whole lifestyle and the necessity of keeping your personal life in order as well as your professional life, because as a senior executive, you're an open book, so to speak. And so that's been quite popular, and a number of interesting questions come up during that session.
Well, I have heard, Bill, that both you and Tommy with Agent have developed programs with OPM to actually help in this SES development process.
Yes, and we are also...
Yours is the newest one, isn't it, Bill?
We're the newest, yes.
And so, Tommy, yours has been in existence a little while. Why don't you talk about your program with OPM and how you think it's coming along?
Well, ours is relatively new as well. We launched it in March of this year to help Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders get to the SES. It's a year-long program, and we have it available for existing GS-15s, and we're hoping to possibly expand that after this year. It is supported by OPM as well as the White House Initiative for Asian American and Pacific Islanders and the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. And this year we had over 100 applicants from 25 different agencies, including the 5 DOD components. And we selected 20 well-qualified candidates from 12 different agencies. And if we could have selected more, we would have, because we were pleasantly surprised by the number of qualified candidates that applied. But because of limited resources, we only selected 20.
So what happens? What does OPM do as part of this program? And what do the agent people do?
Well, OPM helped together the training for this program, which includes courses like personal branding, taking risks, political mapping, building trust, putting together the executive core qualifications, media communications, and things along those lines. And Ajahn's main component is the mentoring, because we have one-on-one matching with a current SCF member, and because Ajahn currently has about 60 or so SCF members in his membership, we were able to get 20 volunteers, and we matched them with the candidates that we selected, and they do the one-on-one coaching, mentoring sessions, and that happens throughout the year.
Okay, you're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're talking with Tommy Wang from Ajahn and Bill Brown from the African American Federal Executives Association. We'll be right back after this short break.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford, and I'm your host today. We're talking with Bill Brown from the African American Federal Executives Association and Tommy Wang from Ajahn, which is the Asian American Government Executive Network. We're talking about diversity and inclusion, and we've been specifically focusing on the shortfall in diversity in the senior executive service and what Bill Brown's group and Tommy Wang's group are doing along with OPM to help help change that shortage in numbers and representation, so that we can have a more diverse leadership. If you'd like to participate in our discussion, just give us a call. Our toll-free number is 1-877-936-9333, or you can email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. So, Bill, just before the break, Tommy was talking about his program with OPM, and I think you've been able to talk to OPM and have a similar program. Tell us about it.
We have a similar program. Our program consists of two components. One is attendance at our workshop, where we get more detailed information. We get we not only talk about the qualifications, if you would, and the various aspects of leadership, et cetera. We talk about health and stress. We also then follow that up with what we call our Fellows Program. In our Fellows Program, we select several high-performing 14s and 15s, and there's an application process, and they are assigned to an SES for one full year, and they have to do it on their own time. And during that one-year period of time, they are exposed to coaching, to mentoring. They're exposed to various assignments. They meet with the board of our organization, and they get that care and feeding that's required, something that you wouldn't get, let's say, if you were going to a class where you were a member of a class. You are actually one-on-one.
How do you make that happen?
How do we make it happen? We simply call for volunteers. We have a structured program. Our program is headed by Dr. Bernice Austin, who used to be the education director for NASA. And so we call her the chancellor for our program. And she's done just a super job of putting a educational packet together. Because it's volunteer, then we're getting those individuals who are truly committed. We also have a formal graduation ceremony, and we have limited the number of people we take into the program, and basically the limit is based on the fact that we have a limited number of SCSers available to give the kind of time and commitment that we're asking for. And we do not we open this to the entire community. It's not just African Americans. It's predominantly African Americans, but anyone who applies to the program who's a member of our organization, we accept into the program. We have graduated 37 people so far, and our current initiative with the program is to get OPM to accept that program as they do the agency programs.
You're talking about the candidate development
program.
This is where people can be accepted non-competitively into the senior executive service.
Absolutely.
So you're working on that.
We're working on that. That's our number one initiative with this program.
And how do you think it's going?
Slow, but it's going.
So the answer is we've not received a no answer yet.
We haven't received a no answer yet.
And hopefully there's some encouragement that maybe it can be done.
Absolutely, Bill.
Okay. And Tommy, do you have something similar with OPM where it might make it a little easier for your people that have been through your program to actually be accepted into the senior executive service?
Yeah, that's something we had a discussion with OPM on. And I think similar to Bill, we don't have it sort of on that level yet where it's certified by OPM and you don't have to compete for a SCS position that comes up. That certainly would be highly desirable because, you know, the main thing for these type of programs, not only for the training and the mentoring for the candidates going through it, but it's the credibility and acceptance by the agencies and the agency leadership that this program is valid and they see the candidates coming out of it as qualified for the SCS positions.
Well, I'd like to ask both of you to comment on these new programs. Do you think they will make a difference? And have you seen them making a difference so far?
Well, in terms of making a difference, I see a rallying call, if you would, a call to action. I'm waiting, if you would, for more specifics, some milestones, and some accomplishments. But I hear a large call out there saying this is what we need to do, but I don't see much beyond that.
And Tommy, what about you? Do you see it making a difference?
Right now, it's a little early to say since we haven't graduated our first class yet, but I do see it making a difference from two fronts. One is from the candidates themselves. We have these 20 candidates, and when I ask them, now how many of them have even written ECQs prior to coming into this program, and about one-third of them said that they never had written ECQs, and it was only by applying to this program that they did that. So even though they seem very well qualified, they never even apply for SCS job. And we know that if you don't apply, obviously you're not going to get there.
Yeah.
So part of it is encouraging them, getting them to understand the process, help them along a little bit, and getting them to see that it's worth applying for SCS and understand what's involved and also get their confidence and desire up a little bit.
Well,
the other side is on the agency leadership to see that, hey, they have these qualified individuals within their own organizations, and they're getting a little visibility and hopefully building some credibility by going through this program, and they're seeing us being out there, and we invited a lot of the leadership in our kickoff event. So that, I think, will help as well.
So it's an interesting issue you raised, the ECQ's executive core qualifications, those five categories of executive leadership that you're required to demonstrate before you can come into the senior executive service. And of course, OPM has a qualifications review board that actually checks all of that out. So, Bill, is that part of your training to help your candidates develop their ECQs and really think about it?
Absolutely. At our conference, we have several workshops. We have three tracks similar to what Tommy was talking about, and we have three tracks, but we offer the ECQs is so popular. We offer that in each of the three tracks to ensure that if an individual wants to go to another program or so forth, that at some time during that 2.5 days, they will get the opportunity to go to look at the ECQs. One interesting thing that we encountered about 2 weeks ago was mentoring a young lady who was applying for an SES position, and she was not required to do the ECQs. It was a resume, and I was very much surprised to see that the process for the senior executive service.
Right. This is a new initiative from OPM, and it's interesting because you still have to have ECQs. You just don't have to put them in the initial application. And so, I was fortunate enough a couple of months ago to go to an OPM program about ECQs and about qualifications review boards, and I learned a lot more about the process than I ever knew. Of course, I don't have to do ECQs since I'm in the private sector. But what surprised me is I started thinking about what I did on a day-to-day basis and how many things I did actually fit within. I think there are 22 different subparts of the five ECQs, how many things I did. And if I didn't think about it, I wouldn't be able to sit down and write it unless I actually like kept a list as it was occurring to me. So I think training on just what it is, because there's so many things people do that fit in the ECQs, they don't even think about it to write it up.
That's an excellent point, because one of the things we tell our individuals is don't think just about what you're doing at the workplace, your current workplace. Think about what you're doing in the community, et cetera, that will fit within those subcategories. And that's an awakening for many of the individuals.
And that's one of the things I learned when I went to this OPM program on ECQs and QRBs, that yes, they're very interested in what people do off duty, especially if it shows a leadership program. If you're the president of your community association, that's absolutely the various things you do fit within those categories. And helping people understand that so that they can prepare themselves for the SES, I think, is very important. So
yeah, that's correct. And I've been telling people that even within Ogden, a lot of things that they have opportunity to do will help them with the ECQs. But I think what's more important is, I come from the private sector myself about 10 years ago, and if you ask people what the definition of a leader is, you get various answers. But within the government, it's actually very clearly defined, and that's what the ECQs are, is the definition of leadership in government. So it really is a roadmap for people's career within government.
It's leading change, business acumen, and a number of other specific categories, and there is a roadmap. And what's interesting under the current program, which is not set and final, and it may be changed, the ECQs are actually the resume applicant has the ECQs developed by the personnel office, and that's what goes to the qualifications review board. I'm not sure that's going to work as well as it should, or as well as it might. Perhaps there are other ways of doing it. But I'd like to talk a little bit about the president's executive order on diversity and inclusion. I'm sure both of you are familiar with that, and I guess I'd like to know what you think of it.
Well, Bill, I think, first of all, I think from the president, I think it was great to have, one, a message out there. My concern, however, is that is the message, and everyone is to rally, if you would, around the flagpole. My concern is, when are they going to rally around the flagpole? The commander-in-chief, the president, has said, encourage diversity.
agency have to come back with plans and so forth. But I'm looking for what's new in it. I think, well, to me, what was new was the president issuing the executive order. The next thing now is the next level down, the implementation. That is where we have quite a bit of concern about it.
And Tommy, you're what have you seen within the federal government on implementing the president's executive order? I think pretty much every agency has by now developed a diversity and inclusion plan and sent it into OPM.
Well, I think it's great that it's coming from the top down, and really that's what it's going to take, is the agency leadership believing in the whole diversity as a not only a strategy, but that it will help the agencies themselves. And they really have to believe in it in order to implement a plan, rather than just putting something down on paper and say, hey, you know, we have something now, we sort of fit the executive order. But to actually implement it and have it roll down throughout the organization, that's what really is going to take, and then have it be built into the process, such as selection and recruiting and everything else that the agency does.
Okay, we have to take a short break. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
GEICO's famous for saving people money on car insurance. And now, if you're a federal employee, you could be saving even more. In fact, you may already qualify for a special federal discount from GEICO. If you're a federal employee, or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, FLIOA, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you could be saving hundreds of dollars. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings. GEICO got its start back in 1936, specifically to serve federal employees. Today, we're still making it easy for federal employees to save money on car insurance. If you're a federal employee, you may qualify for a special federal employee discount. Or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you may also qualify. See how much you could be saving. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings.
I'm Deborah Roth, host of Fed Talk and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Our firm specializes in helping federal employees with legal issues concerning their jobs or benefits. For two decades, we have been representing federal employees in adverse action cases, employment discrimination complaints, inspector general and internal affairs investigations, security clearance issues, and other federal employment disputes. If you have a legal concern, don't wait. Call Shaw, Bransford & Roth at 202-463-8400 or visit our website at shawbransford.com.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford. I'm your host this morning. And we're talking with Tommy Wang from the Asian American Government Executives Network and Bill Brown, who's the president of the African American Federal Executives Association. We're talking about diversity in the senior executive service, but we're also talking more generally about diversity and inclusion, and especially the programs that agencies have just recently developed pursuant to the president's executive order. So my understanding, Bill, what I've heard, and Tommy, what I've heard, is these plans have been developed. They've been submitted to OPM for review, and then I'm not sure what's going to happen next. Do either you, Tommy or Bill, either of you know what's going to happen next?
I'm not aware of what's going to happen next with this initiative, but I hope we can that'll bring the energy that we used to have around this whole subject. I mean, it was we worked all of us a number of organizations for many years testifying before the Congress on the lack of diversity. And as a result, there was a lot. There were a lot of initiatives. There was a bill introduced by Representative Dana Davis and Senator Cockham, and called the SES Diversity Assurance Act. And that energy that we had there at that time seemed to have faded. And then we now have the president's executive order, and we have the agencies now submitting their plans. I hope this is a revival of the issue, and I'm waiting eagerly to see what that next step is going to be, as you said
earlier, rallying around the flagpole. And I know full well what Bill is talking about, the energy, since the Senior Executives Association, where I'm a general counsel, was very, very much a part of that debate. Bill Brown and the senior his organization, the Senior Executives Association, had some differences of opinion about a couple of issues, but we agreed that it needed to be changed. The diversity needed to be improved, and one of the important things we thought was an SES resource office that would actually be responsible for not only making sure the SES was diverse, but developing a leadership path. And that's there is an SES office now under the leadership of John Barry, but then there's also a separate diversity office, and so there seems to be what probably should be combined in one place has been put in two. And I would just to update Bill, I'm not sure you're aware that Senator Akaka has introduced legislation, the SES Reform Act, which is pending in the Senate. Congressman Moran is about to introduce it in the House, and both of those pieces of legislation have a diversity part to them that is similar to the legislation that Danny Davis passionately promoted when he was chairman of, I believe, the Government Reform, Oversight and Government Reform Committee.
Yes, Bill. No, you're correct, and I am familiar with that, the version, and I will say that, yes, you know, we had earlier we had different views on how to approach it, but we had the same goal in mind. And I will tell you that I don't know if we've matured or whatnot over the period of time, but the goal has not changed. And as the goal remains there, even within that new bill that's been introduced, while it doesn't have everything we had wanted, it has, we agree with the goal, and we support, African American Federal Executive Association supports that 100%.
So one of the important provisions that was in Danny Davis's legislation from several years ago that survives in the new bill that Senator Akaka has is very much like what's in the president's executive order, the plans, having a plan to how agencies are actually going to develop their leadership. And I guess, Bill and Tommy, I'd like to, what's your best guess on the, what your hope is on the, what agencies have put together to actually make this successful so that the future leadership of the federal government is diverse as it should be?
Well, my hope on it is that, one, the agency will first assign it to at the undersecretary level, that there will be one individual that will be first held accountable for ensuring that this is implemented. Two, I would hope that they would make the selection boards as diverse as possible. And I know that's encouraged in the bill itself. But I think they've got to really make a conscious effort. Three, I would hope that in making that board diverse, they would reach out not only to active members of the senior executive service, but they would also consider retired members of the senior executive service who can help them in the selection process. And four, at the end of the day, I'm hoping that we'll see more diversity in the SES. You know, we push for an SES that represents the mosaic of America. It's as simple as that. And I would hope that when the smoke clears, that we will see that in the senior executive service.
And Tommy, what about for Asian Americans? How do you see those plans? How do you hope those plans will help them advance in their careers, receive leadership development, and perhaps entry into the SES?
Well, you know, AUGEN has been working with different agencies and even signing some memorandums of understanding with certain agencies to see how we can help them implement some of these plans and the Asian American surrounding employees within those agencies. I think not only having one person responsible, as Bill mentioned, but I think it's also important to have a champion within the agency that is at the senior level for minority groups such as the Asian American Pacific Islanders, and bring out the issues and make sure the employees are well represented. In terms of having the diverse selection boards, you know, we've been talking with OPM on having audience members sit on the quality review boards, the QRBs that OPM has. But within the agencies, those selection boards, they may not have enough SES members in place, depending on the agency, to sit on those boards. But certainly if they do, they should have the diversity represented on the boards. And if not, then maybe reaching out to organizations such as Ogden so that we can supply members that may be able to help in that selection process.
Tommy, is one of the things that I hear a lot about is this selection process at the agency for the senior executive service. First of all, it takes a very long time. And it seems like it's cumbersome, and you get these boards together and it's hard to get them to meet. But from your experience, what you hear from your members, what do you sense is the biggest impediment for Asian Americans, Pacific Islanders, in being considered as a successful candidate for an SES position?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, we're trying to get qualified individuals into these senior positions. So the a person's background and the minority status shouldn't really matter. But, looking at the numbers, we're seeing that somehow it does matter. So it comes down to really a comfort level with the candidates. And you know, until you get to know a person, you might not be able to see beyond some of the physical characteristics. So how do we get them to be more comfortable? And I think that's why it is important to have the minority representation and the diversity of these panels so that those factors are considered equally.
And Bill, you I know you're a passionate spokesperson for the idea of having diversity on the selection panels themselves. Tell me a little bit about why you think that's important.
Well, I think it's very important because I think it's a matter, in my view, of leveling the playing field. I think as there's a comfort level by the applicant, as the applicant walks into that room, I'd like them to see someone that looks a little bit like them, reflects them, et cetera. Now, having said that, and I believe that if the board is diverse, that they will look at cultural nuances and so forth, not as a major factor, but they won't negate, if you would, the individual because of nuances on that may be cultural or whatnot. At the end of the day, my argument has been to have a minority, a female, and a majority member on these boards. But I have never argued that they had to make a certain selection. It is the matter of just having a panel that is diverse, and at the end of the day, selecting whomever they feel is the best person. Now, I'd like to comment, if I could, on one thing that Tommy said, and that was about getting the individuals, if you would, or the panel members to be comfortable with everyone. I always tell people at our conference, if your ship doesn't come in, swim out to it. And by that, I mean that it is up to the applicant to seek out members of the senior executive service and to talk with them, to create a relationship with them so that those individuals will get to know them. And at the same time, they will get to know those individuals and create, if you would, that comfort zone.
Yeah. When I talk to people who are involved in the selection process for senior executives, that they will say that at the end of the day, they were interested in the best qualified candidate. And very often it's, it may be somebody who they've become impressed with over the years because of exactly what you described, Bill, because of that, that particular initiative. So the other thing, it seems like every once in a while GAO does a study on, the federal government's ability to be as diverse as it can be, not just in the SES, but everywhere. It's been a little while since that's happened. Either you, Bill, or Tommy, do you know what's going on there? Are we still taking a look at this? Does somebody care?
Well, I'm not aware that a study has been done recently. I do have a concern. Some of the studies that I've seen have called senior grade lumped together. And my concern is that, and that includes some 14s, 15s, et cetera. I would like to see the figures for the that whole population, but broken down by grade. I'd like to see the SES as a separate element. Having said that, my sense with the SES for African Americans here again is that the men are falling behind and the women are showing a minor increase, but overall we're just marking time, we're not increasing overall as a group. We're just maintaining the status quo. And when you look at the retirement wave and the age and so forth, there should be increases across all of the minority groups.
Especially with the retirement wave. We're going to stop to hear a word from our sponsor. When we return, we'll wrap up our discussion about diversity in the federal government and in the SES. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is Geico anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that Geico isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how Geico actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, Geico saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com. Then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford, your host, and I'm talking to Bill Brown with the African American Federal Executives Association and Tommy Wang with the with AGEN, the Asian American Government Executive Network. We're talking about diversity and inclusion. We're talking about diversity in the senior executive service. So Bill, a little bit about your organization. We started with that, but somebody wants to join your organization. What are the qualifications to join? How do you go about doing that?
Okay. Our membership is open to primarily to GS-14, 15s, and SESs, and high-performing GS-13s, high-performing as determined by your agency. All they have to do is they can go online and join our organization at www.aafea.org. And our dues are very, very reasonable. And as part of being a member of our organization, we also make people aware of job openings. You have the mentoring. We also offer scholarships. We have three groups of scholarships. We offer scholarships to federal employees to do advanced educational opportunities, to do technical training. And we offer scholarships to students in college who are recommended by a member of our organization. This past year, we created a relationship with the William Harvey Leadership Institute at Hampton University, and we gave two students scholarships there. We gave out in April a total of $16,500 in scholarships. Yeah.
Very impressive.
And so we continue to grow that program, and we'll continue.
So the most impressive thing you told me about your organization today, Bill, is your charm school. which I think is a great program. And since I work in and around the SES a lot, I think it's so important. When's your next charm school?
Our next charm school is going to be in April of next year at the same location. And let me just mention one thing that is really the punchline on the charm school. We have two instructors. One is a retired Army colonel, male, and we have a female retired Marine officer. And I will tell you, they will put you, you will be charmed when they get through with you.
That's great. Tommy, if somebody wants to join Ajin, how do they go about it?
Well, Ajin currently has over 300 members, and over half of them are just 15 above, but we are open to everybody, even non-government members have joined. And to join, you go to www.aagen.org and just apply online. It's very simple. And certainly there are a lot of benefits for being a member. And the SES development program that we spoke about earlier, if you look at comparable CDP programs, it's about $23,000 per person to attend. And we're offering that at no cost for the training to the agency or the candidate. They just have to pay for travel if they're coming from out of town. But other than that, it's being offered for free.
So,
all the resources that the audience puts in are voluntary resources.
But you do have to be a member. You do have to be a member.
Actually, no, you don't have to be a member to apply. But we did have a requirement. We have two requirements if you get selected. One is you do have to become a member of Ajin if you are selected. And two, you have to become a mentor yourself later on so that we can pass on the mentoring to other people in the pipeline so that hopefully the GIS 15s will mentor GIS 14s and so on and so forth so that we can get more people that are qualified and trained into the pipeline.
And then, of course, your annual conference, Tommy, is very much a part of your leadership development program, and that's something you do every June?
Yes. The leadership conference is something that we do every June, and it's been growing every year, and it's very popular. And as I said, the coaching that we have is one of the most popular things at the conference. But we also have other things like dinner speaker series that we have maybe every other month that we invite the membership and the guests out. We also have the scholarships as well. So we do have a number of things going on.
And your members are invited to that monthly dinner?
Yes.
And I would encourage people to join just for that alone. I've had the privilege of going once, and it's an excellent dinner. I'd like both of you, both Tommy and Bill have mentioned multiple times mentoring, and I'd like for you both to talk about the importance of mentoring and the barriers, because I hear not enough mentoring happens, and you know what people can do, what your organizations are doing. You've mentioned some things, but really, how can we make mentoring more a part of the norm?
Well, I think mentoring to be part of the norm. And by the way, we have conducted several mentoring sessions at federal agencies. We did one at Department of State last September, and we were going to limit to State Department people. By the time the word got out, we had about six agencies that showed up at State for mentoring. So there is the thirst out there for it. But the way you make it more popular is you be honest up front with the mentee. We do not place a mentee necessarily with the mentor that they're comfortable with. We place them with the mentor they need to be with. In other words, you've got to be create the relationship where the mentee is in a position that they will receive information that they need to have, and it may not be what they want to have.
They may have trouble hearing it.
They may have trouble hearing it, but we create that dialogue, that relationship, and we set that up, those standards up front, the parameters by which this relationship will occur, and then over the period of time, we watch it and we change it if necessary, et cetera. But being honest up front is how you grow that program.
Now, do you have your mentors? Do they work together in the same agency, or can they work in different agencies?
No, they work at various agencies, and here again, we use both retired and individuals who are active, still active in their federal career. As mentors.
And Tommy, what about your mentoring program? A little bit more about how that works.
Well, there's really, can't say enough about the value of having a mentor that's gone through the process and has experience to address any specific issue that you have and to speak on one-on-one. For our coaching from the annual conference, even though it's one-day coaching at the conference, a lot of that become mentoring relationships that carry on informally after the conference. But I like to say to the people out there that mentoring, a lot of these people are very willing to give the time. However, the mentee has to take the initiative. And a lot of them think, so-and-so is in a senior-level position, they're too busy, and I don't want to bother them. But you have to take initiative to make that contact, to call them, to email them, to try to set up the luncheons or the meetings and whatnot. And they will generally spend the time with you when their schedule allows. But if you're not reaching out to them, they're not going to be the ones reaching out to you. So as a mentee, you really have to take the initiative to take advantage.
And I would encourage people to don't just ask once. And when you get a rejection or you get a non-response, let it go. I've sitting on my desk. I got yesterday the second inquiry from somebody who I don't know, who's a young law student on an intern program, who wants to have lunch with me to talk about the legal market in Washington, D.C. after he graduates from law school. And I will call the young man back, but he did have to call me twice. So I think that's probably true for many senior executives who are very busy and do want to do this, but they can't always get back to a response immediately.
Absolutely. Don't ask once, and don't just ask one mentor. You can have more than one mentor.
So a little bit more about these programs that are all been submitted to OPM. When do you think they're going to come out, and do you think OPM is going to publicize them, agencies will publicize them? Do you think there'll be programs and initiative set up?
Well, I think that we're probably going to have to get a little traction on the ground first. And I think that traction is going to occur in a few agencies. And that as there's more experience with the agencies, then we may get an umbrella endorsement of it. And what we're doing in the meantime is we're tracking the individuals who are in our formal program. We're tracking their progress so we can go back with statistics and say, as a result of this, these number of individuals were promoted to the senior executive service.
Tommy, I have Bill Brown said they take outstanding GS-13s. And I will tell you, one of the more impressive things I heard when Danny Davis was doing his congressional hearings on diversity in the SES was the testimony of Reginald Wells at the Social Security Administration, how they start identifying leaders at essentially the GS-9 level. Do you have an opinion on when the leadership development should start?
Well, I think leadership development should start as soon as you start your career. And that's why when I talk to the agency personnel, I tell them regardless of what GS level they're at, they should start looking at their ECQs because it really can create a roadmap for them. And we want to roll down this program, not only just for teams, but as I said, keep on rolling it down so that we get down to the very entry level of government so that we build that pipeline. But we've been speaking with the National Association of Hispanic Federal Executives to start a program for them as well.
Thank you, Tommy. That's all the time we have. We're just about out of time. Thank you, Tommy Wang and Bill Brown, for helping us with our discussion about diversity in the SES. And that is all the time we have for today. Fed Talk is brought to you by the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Have a great weekend.